is the monthly report for Aid Northwest. Aid Northwest is Advocates for Immigrants in Detention Northwest. Aid Northwest supports immigrants in detention and when released from the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma through welcoming services focused on transitional support and connection to vital resources for resettlement. This is the Aid Northwest monthly report for January 2024. A deacon who gives services inside stopped to say hello. He says he tells everyone he talks to inside that good folks are waiting to help them when they make it out. And we didn't welcome any releases today. At 5:15, I walked over to the GEO side and asked the gentleman behind the desk if he could contact ICE for us. He did, and informed us that there wouldn't be any releases today. And we were expecting three releases today, and the first one came out around 3:45 p.m. He had been in a detention center for 75 days. He was detained in Idaho when he was driving to Indiana to meet up with friends. We found a flight for him with Alaska Airlines departing at 11 p.m. the same night. The flight was from SeaTac with a stop in Chicago. We tried to find him a non-stop direct flight, but there weren't any. He had a cell phone, and we contacted acquaintances who texted him a credit card number to purchase the flight. Another volunteer came around 4:45 p.m. and drove him to the Airport Express bus. The bus driver told her that third-party payment was not accepted on the bus. She was using one of the ORCA cards we have on hand to pay for his ride to the airport. Although he stayed on the bus, the driver was not amicable about how we paid for the bus ride. I had an opportunity to speak with the guest for a while before he left, and his story is incredibly challenging. He came to the U.S. from Nicaragua in 2022. He encountered many challenges along the way, including being abducted while in transit through Mexico. His friends had to pay $7,000 for the ransom. There were people from Mexico who were nice to him along the way and helped him with funds and rides from place to place. After reaching the U.S. border, he asked for asylum. Unfortunately for him, he drove here from Indiana with a friend to visit a friend in Seattle. But on his way back, he was stopped by the Idaho State Patrol, who called ICE. He was placed in a federal facility in Idaho before he was moved to Tacoma. And we welcomed just one guest from Burma. That was actually on his ICE ID instead of Myanmar. And he had been living in the U.S. for 10 years or more. ICE had tried to deport him, but Myanmar refused to accept him. A relative picked him up within about 30 minutes of his release, and they headed back to eastern Washington. We felt fortunate for the dry afternoon. Always a pleasure to spend time with such wonderful people. And four of us held the fort at the Welcome Center this rainy evening, greeting two guests. One was a woman from India who is headed to Sacramento, but was picked up by a local relative. The other was a man from Mexico who had someone coming from Portland to pick him up. We took him to the hospitality house to wait for his ride. We were happy to serve. And one lucky man from Jordan was released today. He speaks Arabic and English. His relative wanted to purchase a 6:45 p.m. flight despite us telling him that there was not enough time to get him to the airport and despite us finding a cheap Alaska flight leaving at 8:50 p.m. I finally said to him, "Your cousin will miss the flight," before giving the phone back to our guest. Luckily, our guest convinced his cousin to give him the credit card number for us to book the flight leaving at 8:50 p.m. Our guest said his cousin had a stone mind. Martha and I like that word. Why call someone stubborn when you can call him stone mind? Shortly after, a friend picked him up and took him to the airport. And it was a quiet but enjoyable afternoon at the Welcome Center. We feared that no one would be coming out, but there were two late releases just as it got dark. Both young women were from Mexico and did not speak English. Google Translate and some high school Spanish served us well. One was going to the Bay Area, but as we were looking for tickets, the prices doubled and then vanished. Her family decided it was best to have her stay safely at the hospitality house, and she'll take an Uber in the morning to the airport. The other woman was waiting for her family in Oregon to pick her up. We closed up the Welcome Center, and they were whisked off to the hospitality house. And, a little after 2 p.m., a man from Nicaragua was released and told us he was going to Des Moines. We quickly got him a coat, hat, gloves, and fired up the heater in the tent. We started looking for flights to Des Moines, Iowa, but the gentleman told us that his ride had arrived to pick him up. It only took us a minute or so and some laughter to remember that there is a Des Moines, Washington. We had no other releases. And it was a chilly, rainy afternoon at the Welcome Center, and we decided not to open the tents right away, as so few guests have been released recently. We greeted our only guest at 4:30, a young man from Mexico, who was picked up quickly by his relatives before eventually heading to Reno, Nevada. They greatly appreciated the jacket, food, and backpack. A lady from the University Place Presbyterian Church brought by gloves, always needed. And only one person was released, a man who went straight to be picked up by a friend or family. Around 5 p.m., ICE called and said there were no more releases for the day. And today we had no releases, no visitors, and no rain. We did have good conversation, hot beverages, brief naps, and a time to clean out the fridge. Here's hoping for a few releases tomorrow. And we greeted two releases, and there was a third who did not visit the Welcome Center. Both people released were from Mexico and headed to Oregon. Eventually, they booked seats on the 5:15 p.m. Flix bus. The first release came at 1:45 and was waiting when I arrived at 1:55. He did not have an ID, either from ICE or from before. I took him to the office to get it. He wanted to take an Uber to Portland, but we convinced him to wait for the $24 bus. The next release came at 2:40, and his ID had his name misspelled, but ICE would not fix it. Then he lost his ID. We had to go back to the office and get another one. We took both guests to the airport around 4:45. And today, there were three guests waiting for us when we showed up at 2 p.m., and there would be two more later. Initially, two men from India, who had become friends while in detention, asked for help getting to the Sikh temple, where one of their friends was planning to pick them up in the evening, keep them overnight, and help them secure plane tickets to New York City tomorrow. The third early afternoon release was a woman from Mexico with a red card, apparently received due to crossing back into the U.S. a year ago to see her U.S.-born children for Christmas after being deported months prior. Her kids and parents and other family members have all lived in Nebraska for years. ICE did not return her purse or phone. She said ICE took them when apprehending her at the San Ysidro crossing, but she didn't care as she was so excited to see her family. She said she had never flown before and was very nervous to do so. Despite a fairly inexpensive red-eye ticket on the American with a layover in Dallas and over 1 hour transfer to Omaha in the morning, the family thought it more wise to purchase a fairly expensive one-way ticket on Alaska Airlines, departing at 7:25 a.m., meaning an overnight wait at SeaTac Airport tonight. We got the confirmation code from the family and printed her ticket out. We set her up with food and a warm coat, and she was incredibly grateful. Later, we drove the three guests north, the two men to the Sikh temple, and the woman going to the airport, where I described how to get her to N-Gate, accompanied her to security, and watched as she went through with no unforeseen problems. The guy checking IDs had to ask a more experienced worker if her red card was okay, and there was no problem that her flight wasn't until the morning. It did take 2 or 3 minutes being frisked due to her ankle monitor. I couldn't accompany her through security to ensure she got to her end gate, since security passes are only issued on day of flights, but she spoke English fairly well, so was going to be fine. About the time our last volunteer arrived at 3 p.m., I received a call from an attorney from the Northwest Immigration Rights Project saying that earlier that day she had won her case for an illiterate woman from Mexico who spoke only Spanish and who would be coming out later. She asked if it would be okay if the woman stayed at the hospitality house tonight, since her relative would be driving from Idaho to pick her up in the morning. The attorney arrived an hour later with her partner and their very well-behaved service dogs on leash, and she spent a lot of time informing us about the situation with cases nowadays. She was particularly surprised that her client was granted asylum today due to it being a most restrictive judge, but that the judge absolutely loved dogs, which put him in a particularly good mood, seeing that the attorney had hers there during the hearing. She also said that the numbers inside are in the 900s, and she thinks the reason very few are being released nowadays is due to the Biden administration trying to look tough on immigration. She also said the clients are reporting that they've been cold inside the facility due to coats being taken away. Meanwhile, Steve had helped a person who was dropped off by an Uber find her way into the detention center office carrying lots of bags, perhaps a family member of someone inside. The person at the desk invited him to come back at 4 p.m. to see if there would be any more releases. The attorney was there talking to us for well over an hour as the expected release was not yet out. So at 4:30, Steve went in to check, and just then ICE called to tell us that two people were being processed to come out soon, and then that would be it, with no releases scheduled for tomorrow. However, just before that, a lay minister we've met outside before stopped by and said he expects one of his flock inside to be released tomorrow. The fellow was apparently in a wheelchair, and according to the email the minister received, the man was so confident of release that he already booked a hotel for tomorrow night and expected to go to the Nativity House on Friday. Just to see, we tried calling Nativity House, but no answer, and their voicemail wasn't set up. We got a bit busy at that point, so the minister departed and will likely keep investigating whether Nativity House is a real possibility for the man inside, assuming he really gets released. The attorney's client and a man from Ukraine came out just before 5 p.m. Using the man's Canadian debit card, Steve quickly arranged a fairly affordable 11:50 p.m. Alaska Airlines red-eye flight for the man to Florida, where a relative had arranged for him to stay with a friend. Since our volunteer driver didn't have room in his vehicle for him and his huge suitcase, and since the man spoke excellent English, we brought him to the airport bus. We took the woman whose attorney won her court case today to the hospitality house after giving her a nice coat for her travels to Idaho. And Friday's frigid-friendly team of volunteers at the RV arrived in the beautiful, sunny, but 20-degree day, that's Fahrenheit, not Celsius, and made a beeline for the furnace and hot water, as well as the other opening procedures. Wanting to make ourselves useful, we did a little organizing. We moved some of the larger suitcases to a compartment under the RV. We found some lovely fresh sandwiches that we're sure will last until Tuesday, especially because they will probably be in deep freeze by then. Also, we put some apples in a cooler on the floor in an attempt to keep them from freezing. It was a delight to meet Donna when she stopped by to check on supplies and to do even more organizing, and we talked about the need for more mittens. Thankfully, Susan has been working on getting a few more. We had a bit of indecision about whether to brave the freezing walk to the detention center restrooms or the indecent temperatures inside the porta potty. Most of us decided on the detention center, where the guards welcomed us in and joked with us about the weather. Claudia decided to go for a walk, which lasted only about the 2 seconds it took for her legs to almost freeze off. Did I mention it was cold? About 4:30, Claudia received the call from ICE that there would be no releases today, and they did not know if there would be any the next day. Given the temperatures that they would have to endure, we were almost glad that no one was released, but not quite. We were glad for the time to continue to orient ourselves to the procedures of welcoming, since we are all relatively new volunteers. We quickly closed up and left about 4:45 after our struggle with the door, a wintry sunset of 17 degrees. That's Fahrenheit, not Celsius. Here are the statistics for January 2024. 10 rides given by volunteers. 36 visits in detention, 55 letters written, 9 deportation bags, 105 phone funds cards, 14 backpacks, and 8 coats. There have been 4 guests at the hospitality house.
This is Louisa Beal with Aid Northwest and Radio Tacoma. And I am talking with Gretchen Nicholas, who works at the Welcome Center. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So I'm so glad that you are able to talk with me and, you know, talk about the Welcome Center. I was down there last week where I met you, and it was busy. I felt like I was just in the way and everything. So, you know, a quick hello, and now we get a chance to talk. So there's a few things that I kind of want to ask about. One is, how did you get involved? It's always curious for me to see how people come to Aid Northwest.
There's two elements to how I got involved. One, immigration is all over the news. Mm-hmm. And you can't help but being curious, what's the real story for immigrants? Who are they? And what are their stories? And how do they experience coming to the country? I mean, after all, my great-grandparents immigrated, 120 years ago? And surely someone greeted them and helped them. Mm-hmm. So I'd been thinking about it anyway. And then ironically, I play pickleball, and the woman I was playing pickleball said, "Oh, I have a job up at Aid Northwest." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" And she said, "Well, you know, we help people who are immigrating, who have appealed for asylum and are getting let out of ICE." And I thought, wow, that's just great. So I've only been doing it for 8 months, but it's really been rewarding for me.
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah. It's like seeing the people being released after,
yes,
I don't know how many, you know, days, weeks, months, years.
Oh, man. Sometimes it almost brings tears to your eyes, yeah. You know. They're so excited and so appreciative. Sometimes they're scared and kind of confused. You know, I worked with a very young Chinese man yesterday, and he didn't speak any English. And you know, he was obviously scared and confused. So I did everything I could to kind of make him feel comfortable. And we got a translator. We have online translators that help us. And she helped us talk to him. And he needed some extra help getting his ticket, because his host also spoke Chinese and no English. So we took him to, we have a hospitality house, we call it, where if people can't get a reservation that night, we take them and they stay overnight, and then someone helps them the next day. So, you know, I think he finally started to relax and feel comfortable. You know, some of our guests speak English really well, and sometimes we press them into service to help us in translating with the other guests.
Wow. Well, you know, it's got to be very terrifying sometimes to step out into this strange country, into this strange landscape. I mean, it's all warehouses and stuff around there. You know, without the Welcome Center, I have no idea what they would do.
Oh my gosh. Well, you have to remember that, first of all, a lot of these people are applying for asylum. And we know a few of their stories. And the stories I do know are of people who testified against criminal gangs or somehow revealed the doings of a political group like Hamas. And they've been through pretty tough times, right? So they get released. When they get released in whatever clothes they surrendered in. So it might be in the middle of the winter and they might be wearing a t-shirt and shorts. And their phones might not be charged. They might not have shoelaces in their shoes. Many of them have already left a difficult circumstance and now they're coming into a very strange and difficult circumstance. So, you know, a lot of people donate. So we have coats and gloves and hats, and I was putting coats on a lot of people yesterday.
It's getting pretty cold.
And yeah, and we can charge their phones and give them phones if they need it and help them contact their hosts. Plus, we can print tickets for them, and the tickets that we give them, if they're language compromised, have instructions stapled to them so that the people in the airport, if they need help, will understand that this person speaks another language and help them get to their plane. And we also have a what we call PDANs, which is a term for a driver. So drivers show up and take people different places. Last night, I took a person to the hospitality house, and another three Sikh people went to the Sikh temple, which, you know, the Sikh temple is a wonderful place, very supportive to the Sikhs that come from India. And then the driver took several people to the airport. So, and you know, it's exciting a lot of times when they're getting in the car to get on the plane and go to their, you know, their relatives or friends or sponsors. You know, they just have a big smile on their face. All of a sudden they've gone from a little bit scared to really happy, and you get high fives all around. And I often think about, wow, just think, I mean, people have been doing this for hundreds of years. And, you know, when my family came over from Sweden and Germany, you know, who greeted them and how was it for them? I mean, this is a really big deal for people to immigrate. And these are smart people.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, they have skills frequently. Like I said, I don't know everybody's story, but frequently some of the people who've run afoul of criminal enterprises had businesses or repair shops or were accountants. And you know, they're really a great, they're a loss for their country, but a great addition to ours.
Well, you really are making a difference, not only for the detainees and the people who are released and everything about the Welcome Center, but for this country. I mean, these people are going to be a valuable asset.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. They're unfailingly polite and grateful. And, you know, I have to say, it's not just a benefit to the country, it's a benefit to me, because I don't purposely stay in a little bubble, but I have a circle of friends down here where I live that are a lot like me. And I'm getting to learn. Well, a couple of days ago, I had a long conversation with a Sikh from India. And, you know, I talked to him about his religion and where he lived. And you just start with the people that speak fluent English, you start to kind of understand what their lives are like and who they are and what their hopes and dreams are when they come here. And that's kind of what I got involved in for the first place, was to understand the immigration issue. The ICE Center doesn't just have people released who have applied for asylum. Sometimes it's people who are foreign nationals who have been picked up. One, for example, if they try to cross the Canadian border, not knowing that they're not supposed to do that, sometimes they'll get picked up and thrown in ICE. And, you know, there's different reasons. I don't find out all the reasons. So there's a variety of people that get released for different reasons. Like I said, it kind of acquainted me with a part of the world that I didn't know before. And I think it's valuable to me, too.
Yeah.
I have to say, there's one other little plus. Several of us that work there are retired and we travel. And the nature of the job, there's enough rotating volunteers that you can be gone for 3 weeks and not hurt the program. And for a lot of volunteer work. A lot of people, when they retire, want to volunteer, but a lot of volunteer jobs require that you're there consistently. And this job allows us to be gone. I work, when I'm here, I work 3 shifts a week from 2 o'clock to close, which is 7 o'clock. You know, I show up and do the opening and, you know, get everything set up for our guests and, of course, greet our guests, which is the exciting moment for all of us. You know, it's, oh, boy, we have guests, you know. And another funny thing is other people who join are people that are wanting to learn language skills. So sometimes if they know a person who's coming speaks Spanish, they'll put dibs on the Spanish speaker so they can practice their Spanish.
Wow.
We have lots of Spanish speakers, and we do have translators. We could use some other languages. It's a common misconception that the immigrants that are coming into this country are all from Mexico. At least at where we come from, they aren't. They're a great variety of people. We get them from Colombia and different, and Venezuela and different parts of South America. We've had Ukrainians and people from Belarus and some of those countries. We get them from India. We get, and Africa, occasionally Africa. And so it's quite a variety, and it's, you know, for, again, many of them have some English, and so you get to find out a little bit about their lives and preferences. Mm-hmm. We're very dependent on donations from the community at large for gloves and coats and snacks. You know, we give them cold drinks in the summertime and we prepare hot drinks for them. Last night we were giving them all hot cups of soup because it was really cold in the tents. Yeah. We have little heaters, but this time of year it's kind of tough. You know, we give everybody coats. Not all of them are real thick coats, but, you know, at least we're standing in a tent with a tiny heater. But It's we're in the elements, so that's a challenging part of the job.
Yeah. But you mentioned about donations, and you know, it's so easy to donate.
An inexpensive pair of gloves costs $10.
Yeah,
you know, so for $50, 5 people have gloves. Mm-hmm. And you, like I said, sometimes the people that are coming out, a lot of them go to New York City. They have contacts there. There's a big community of immigrants there. And gosh, at this time of year, it's really cold.
Yeah. Colder than here even.
Yeah. And how many people have lots of extra jackets hanging in their closet that they just don't wear anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we give them hats. Shoelaces are a big deal.
Yeah.
Because if they have shoelaces in their shoes when they surrender for the asylum request, the shoelaces get taken away from them, so they come out with no shoelaces.
Oh, my.
Which is kind of weird, you know. Yeah. So we give them shoelaces.
I mean, at least they could save them and give them back when they're released.
Right. Well, they come out with plastic bags of their possessions. So that's the other thing, is we have donated suitcases and backpacks and containers, because who wants to get on the train with or the plane with no shoelaces and your bags and your stuff in a plastic bag?
Oh, yeah.
So we give them backpacks and coats. And in some case, we have a big van, as you know. It's a big travel van. And in the back, we have shirts and pants, because sometimes they come out in like shorts and a t-shirt, and it's the middle of the winter, so we give them a pair of pants and a shirt too. Mm-hmm. We pretty much completely outfit some people depending on the circumstance that they were in when they surrendered to ask for asylum, or again, there's a number of circumstances that people end up in ICE for, but you know, those are the real hardship cases where they don't know anybody or don't have anyone to pick them up and they need to get a plane ticket.
Well, this is amazing to me. I mean, when I was down there just that one time, I felt overwhelmed. And, you know, my technological skills are not that good. So trying to get an online plane ticket and reservation.
I have to tell you, it's a real challenge. And being retired, I can say that if I was going to volunteer, I didn't want a mindless volunteer job. I wanted one that challenged me and taught me new skills. And boy, oh boy. The first couple months of work, I felt like I was learning from a fire hose because of all the things you have to maneuver. I've been at it for almost a year now, and I'm starting to feel pretty competent. I've learned most of the systems. Anybody can learn it, but they have a lead. There's always a lead assigned for every shift, and there's usually three or four people. So the lead usually knows everything. When I started out, I was asking a lot of questions, you know, like, where do I go to get a ticket? What are the details of getting a ticket? And they have manuals and instructions, but still there's little things that you're saying. Well, you know, for example, things I had to learn, they have a computer that doesn't have a mouse, and I always use a mouse. And so when I went on the computer to print a ticket, I was just struggling. Well, how do you use this pad thing? And so someone came over and taught me how to use it. Now I know how to use it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of retirees, but there's a lot of young people too who are in college or learning languages or part of their church. You know, a lot of churches volunteer people. So it also gives me a chance to connect with people from different religions, or some of the people who come from the different churches, or people who are in college and hear about what they're studying. And, you know, often they're studying to be involved somehow in the helping professions. And they're pretty skilled, and I learn a lot from them. And they're wonderful young people, wonderful. I mean, all of them, the volunteers I work with, that's just another big asset of the program, is just meeting people from all walks of life. And they don't all live in Tacoma. People drive down from Seattle. I and several people drive up from Olympia. There's people that drive over from Grig Harbor. So, you know, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like it's rewarding in so many ways. I mean, you know, certainly helping, making a big difference in the lives of these people who are released, and the learning challenges that really keep your mind active.
Yeah.
And the connections with the other volunteers. It's just, it just seems like a really, an elegant.
Are you going to volunteer?
I can't.
Have I got you enthusiastic? So are you ready?
I got
to volunteer?
It. Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, my brain's full. So.
Yeah.
But no, I'm hoping that your message will reach some people and let them know this is not a grind. It's just such a wonderful experience.
You know, just the moment when the person is leaving to get on the airplane and the look on their faces, it almost brings me to tears sometimes. Or even a woman who finally came over, her family was over and they arrived with a bouquet of flowers and, you know, and people were taking pictures and, you know, it's just heartwarming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wow. I really appreciate what you do. And thank you for talking with me. This is...
Well, sure. I hope that it gets out there and more people realize what you can do. The volunteer jobs aren't just working in our big RV and getting plane tickets. We have drivers who show up at 4 o'clock and drive people to the airport.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's a hospitality house, and my husband and I just helped do a move into the hospitality house and try to help out there. There's a wonderful young man who kind of oversees the hospitality house. He's also an immigrant.
Yeah, that's Franklin, right?
And, you know, I don't know if you want to put this in the broadcast, but one of the frustrating things is that unless you're from a country like Ukraine or Venezuela, even though you've been released, you can't get a work permit for a year. So these people are in the country, having been seen, you know, a judge has seen them and seen that they have a legitimate case. They might have to go back before the judge again, but they can't get a work permit. And, you know, there's certain categories of people. I believe Venezuela, and I believe Ukraine, where they get work permits upon entering the country, which is great because they don't have to depend on charity. But there's a whole network of people out there that are trying to help people who come into this country and are not allowed to get work permits for a year, they are willing and able to work, and they'll do almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the majority have hosts of some sort. I suppose maybe I don't know, you know, why. Maybe they have families or whatever, or someone has agreed to host them. I know there's another big network called World Relief that helps with hosting people that don't have the connections they need. So I don't know how the whole system works. I'm just now discovering that there's a pretty big network of people who are trying to help. But I know that it's gone before Congress, the idea that we need to allow people who have been released, even if it's provisionally, to have a temporary work permit so that they don't have to ask for charity. And I think that would be really helpful if that actually passed. And I don't know all the correct details about it, but I do know that I saw it in the newspaper recently that it's been brought up in Congress. So that's a pretty important detail.
It's a very important. Yeah. Yeah. Because again, you know, we just don't want that situation.
Well, we're talking about proud people who have been seen by a judge who is deemed, at least, you know, for the temporary time. Some of them, like I said, have to go back again, but they've been deemed that it's okay. There's enough evidence for them to be allowed into the country. Like I said, my observation is the majority of them have professions and were working in the country they left.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my observation. I don't know the whole story in the whole United States, but these are people that have talents. I do know that the one fellow who's an accountant had, as soon as he could get his work permit, he had a job waiting for him because he was an accountant. Yeah.
Sure,
isn't that cool?
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, again, you're learning all the time. No, again, I really appreciate you talking and sharing the stories. And,
okay. Mm-hmm, so like I said, there's a number of ways a person can fill in. So,
right.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for being interested in this subject. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Gretchen. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
You can register now for our next community meeting. Email us at officevolunteer@aidnorthwest.org. Again, that is officevolunteer@aidnorthwest.org. Aid Northwest is financed 100% through donations from individuals and private organizations. Aid Northwest relies on the over 200 volunteers, a small paid staff, and is only possible because of the many generous donors. Please visit our website for donation information. Financial donations, as well as donations of food, clothing, and backpacks, are gratefully accepted. There are many volunteer opportunities, from assisting at the Welcome Center, supporting immigrants while in detention, to serving on a committee. You can learn more at the website aidnorthwest.org. That is AIDNW.org.
You can email us at volunteercoordinator@aidnorthwest.org.
Aid Northwest, supporting immigrants with dignity while in detention and upon release. Thank you.